From a fast break to recovery, Indiana hospitals are here for every Hoosier, regardless of their ability to pay. That's why we're teaming up with legislators on a winning playbook to lower costs and protect access to care across our communities. Because good policy doesn't leave anyone on the sidelines. Learn more at HoosierLifeline.com.
I came across an article from the American Bar Association that was titled "The Contemporary Relevance of Historic Black Land Loss." It started off with a story of a man named Reverend Isaac Simmons, who was a black farmer who was lynched in the year of 1944 by white men when he refused to give up his farmland to these men. And this subject on land loss or land ownership of black people is one that is very relevant even to this day. At the close of the Civil War, black Americans owned very little farmland, but began acquiring it at a rapid pace. So by 1910, black farmers owned more than 16 million acres of land. However, this was the peak of black farm ownership in the United States. And as we talk about the turn of the 20th century, there was a rapid depossession of black-owned agricultural acreage and black land loss. This was attributed to state violence. We're talking about intimidation, lynching of black farmers, and also due to discrimination by banks, financial institutions through the denial of access to federal farm benefits by local administrations and by white farm owners. And many of this article also talked about that the cumulative value of black land lost today is about $326 billion dollars, and how significant continues to be within the United States context. But today, I also want to talk about how there are so many interconnections when we're talking about black land ownership, where there are black populations, and I'm speaking about black populations within Central America in this context. And in Punta Gorda, Belize, where my mom is from, also known as Piney, which is the Garifuna word of saying Punta Gorda, there is a land called Cerro, which is collectively owned by the Garifuna people. We're gonna talk about what exactly does that mean, right? When we're talking about not only land rights in the context of Central America, but also what does it mean for black people more broadly? The Garifunas are currently living in Honduras, Guatemala, and Nicaragua. What does it mean for them? But what does it mean across the black diaspora, and how it directly even relates to the story of African-American farmers within the United States and the importance of land ownership, collective land ownership in this case? We're going to speak to Hervin Morgan, who is a Belizean activist who currently lives on Cerro in Punta Gorda, also known as Piney, Belize.
The world right now, as we live, as we journey through this earth, we don't have high understanding, a deep understanding of justice and fairness. It was something spoken about by Jesus Christ for many years, justice and fairness. And so Cerro is all about fairness.
On the season of The Labyrinth of the First Gen, we will explore a conversation about what we carry with us and what we redefine. We are pioneers just by simply existing.
My name is Hervin Morgan. I live presently here at Cerro, that's in Piney. And for a translation of that to people, they know it as Punta Gorda, but I refer to this lovely place as Peini. And Cerro is another wonderful part of Peini.
Part of the podcast is talking about this idea of first gen. And I like to define first generation as people in the world globally that have done something that has never been done before. So when I mention first gen, I want to hear from you. What does that mean to you when you hear the word first gen?
Well, my sister, I love the term. I love your passion, your first generation. I want to say mainly that first generation to me, it is ongoing. In other words, I had that first generation. You're going to be first generation. My grandmother was their gifts that they came here with, created with, and they've made the best out of it. And so first generation is very wide. It is always there. It's always there's not just a first and then there are no more firsts. There is always a first. So I was a first. You are a first. Your child will be first. Your grandmother was a first, you know. So, yeah, that's what it means to me.
I want to talk about where we are today, because I know this is Cerro, and this is a very special place, especially for Garifunas and the history around that. So can you talk a little bit about what Cerro means for the Garifuna people and population?
In short, I'll try to make this brief and go to the points. Cerro is, in simple terms, it was a piece of land, about 960, approximately 1,000 acres of land, purchased many, many years ago, over 100 years ago, by the known benefactor, was Jose Maria Nunes, that's the name of the person, and he left it he passed on to us that it's land that's never supposed to be sold, which in our lands, you shouldn't be selling land, but it's never to be sold. It was supposed to be used for the benefit of his generation. That's us right now, who have come hundreds of years after. We're still benefiting from Cerro.
Hervin talked about the reason why he chose to live in Cerro.
Why I chose to live at Cerro, that's over 20-something years ago. I'm not counting the years. It's almost 30 years, I believe. At the time, there was all kind of confusion. There still is confusion or very little understanding about Cerro. And so I made the decision to be an example to others that this is our prize. This is our property. It is, we need not be living as landless people. As if anyone has experienced being kicked out of a home and don't know where to go, then you'll know how that feels, and how Jose Maria Nunes and his generation, they thought about us that we should not feel that way. We have a home to come to.
Hervin talked about the history of Cerro and how this idea of having a collective piece of land started for the Garifuna population in Belize. And can you talk a little bit about Jose Nunes, because I never heard of him before?
Absolutely, you're correct. And let me say something. Jose Maria Nunes has never been mentioned in Belize as a benefactor, as somebody who's been referenced, but I'm happy that you asked that. He is a greater benefactor than many of the benefactors that we celebrate every year. Think about it. He left this property that we're on right now. It's actual property. It's private property. It's not a reserve. It is we have rights here at Cerro, as much rights as anyone has with their private land document, except of course that we have this right collectively. It's a wonderful idea. So Jose Maria Nunes, a Garifuna, many years ago, we know not much about him other than he was the mastermind of this wonderful concept that we now know as Cerro, as this lovely place that we know as Cerro.
When we say that Cerro is collectively owned, this means that a person of Garifuna descent from Belize, so that can mean that you were born and raised in Belize or you are of Garifuna descent, has access to living and creating a life for themselves on the land that is referred to as Cerro. It requires an application for the Belizean Library with some questions that ask, or what would you like to do with Cerro? And there's a focus on people who have goals to use the land for collective purposes or for projects that will benefit other people within the area as well. And if you are a Garifuna person, you would also have to provide proof, whether that mean sort of documentation that shows that you are a person of Garifuna descent. However, little is known about how Jose Nunes came up with the idea or about the history of who he was himself as a Belizean pioneer of land rights and land ownership for his people.
It would be a research we'd have to take on to dig into who he was and exact years of when everything happened. But as best as I know, he's one of the biggest benefactors to Belize, to the world, but he's never been mentioned, not even in Belize.
I think it also speaks to histories of stories that people know, or maybe you heard of Jose because of this land, but maybe it's something that Belizeans in general or even the world don't have an understanding about.
Yeah, it's both. It's both. The world right now, as we live, as we journey through this earth, we don't have high understanding, a deep understanding of justice and fairness. It was something spoken about by Jesus Christ for many years, justice and fairness. And so Cerro is all about fairness. Many people, many of us, even some of us who are beneficiaries, were entitled to take part in the benefits, in the privileges, and of course the responsibilities of Cerro. We don't understand Cerro because the core of Cerro is about fairness and justice. It is about, you know, and that's something that's a whole topic in itself, I believe.
Speaking about this land and your choice to live here, to have your family here, what does it mean to you?
You touch a deep question. It means everything to me. If I had to do it over again, if I had to ask God for one more chance, I would say ask him to come back to Cerro. Yeah, that's what it means. It means so much. Looking back, I never realized that it would be so great when we journeyed out here 30 something years ago.
We talked about what it was like for Irvin to come to Cerro and create his life here for his family.
What was it like when you first came, like 30 something years ago? Like, you established this whole thing?
Yes, absolutely. If you look around the trees here, you'll see, you can witness that there's 30 something years of effort here.
Herman explained when he first came to Cerro, there were often a lot of misconceptions around what Cerro is and was. And even till this day, there's a lot of misconceptions or assumptions around the fact that Cerro will not exist.
All right, and yes. When we came here, it was there. Cerro was not a popular place to be at the time because we were being threatened of Cerro was going to be taken away. That's, we grew up hearing, everybody knew, next year there will be no more Cerro. Cerro is going to be taken away. Remember, Cerro is all about justice, is about fairness, and so therefore the war, it will not enjoy the support of the system. It will be opposed. And so even today, Cerro is opposed. So you'll hear a lot of things. Oh, Cerro will have taxes and we can't pay and government that take it away. You hear a lot of these things when many of the things that you hear, they're not founded. They don't have any kind of foundation.
We're going to take a quick pause and continue the conversation when we return. The Labyrinth of the First Gen would like to announce a call to action. We hope that you are currently enjoying the show and we want to hear feedback from you. So if you are listening on this show on any of iTunes platform, Spotify, as well as Google Podcasts. Please rate the show. Let us know what you think. And as they say, sharing is caring. So share this episode with a friend.
And we are back. This is the Labyrinth, Labyrinth of the First Gen.
But Irvin talked about how his background and his studies gave him insight around what sorrow meant and also the land rights and the land laws that protected the Garifuna people who decided to live on sorrow, who decided to be the beneficiaries of their access to collective land.
I was blessed to have studied land law, you know, where I took on my studies in surveying and everything, and blessed with surveying studies. So in terms of land and law and transactions, it's something that I worked in the lands department. That's part of my experience, which told me that, hey, there's work to do here on Sarah, and there's still work to do. There's still a lot of work to do here.
When you're referring to that there's still a lot of work to do, can you talk about what you mean by that?
Well, for starters, or for main thing, is that my wish or my prayer is that we would all understand more about Sarah. That we'll all have probably a handbook or stories which are logical, which you can pass on to one generation to the next. So to every first generation after me, I would like them to know that this is exactly how Sarah is.
Irvin talked about how really knowledge and education around what does it mean to have the right and responsibility of living and also passing on this land right to future generations to come.
I have no fear that Sarah, the many fears are that, oh, Sarah is going to go away, it's going to be taken away. No, I don't have that fear, but I do hope that it would be better understood so that the people can better partake in this wonderful, in this most precious physical earthly gift that we have been given, you know, that Sarah.
When I think about sorrow has a lot of significance. And when I'm thinking about what it means in the context of Belize, but also what it means across the Garifuna Nation that exists in Belize, in Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, because the Garifuna people are considered Afro-Indigenous people, they are protected under land rights in Central America, right? But these rights are often violated. And, you know, this is something that is prevalent throughout Central America. This is something that is happening in almost every place that the Garifuna currently exist. And what Cerro represents in the broader Garifuna context. So I wanted to get Irvin's opinion about this, his perspective on what Cerro means in the broader context of Belize, but also across Garifuna communities in Central America.
I'm thinking about not only Garifunas here in Belize, but I'm thinking about Garifunas in Honduras living on land, supposedly protected land in Honduras, for example. But
they're often forcefully removed through violence.
Or people come and buy the land, right? How do you see like the connection between Cerro, not only in Belize, but in other places where there are Garifuna populations?
Well, from what I've heard, like in Honduras, in Guatemala, even in Belize, there's the land that the difference with Cerro is that the people who envisioned the Marian Nunes and thereafter, I would say, you know, because it didn't stop with Jose Marian Nunes. Several activists came after him and furthered the whole idea, including, I believe, our generation. We're doing, this is what we're doing right now. The difference is that it's a the people who envisioned Sarah, Jose Mari Nunes and his generation, they understood that land tenure systems of purchasing land or having title to land or having the rights of a title as we know it, whether it's in the States or any other part of the world, if it's in England or United States, in Germany, it's land tenure, land titles. It's called some form, but essentially you have legal rights to land. That's what you have. Now, the people who settled in Honduras, in other parts of Belize, and not only Garifuna, of course, they have other settlements in Belize, who never understood that it was so important to have the land in so important to abide by the land law, which is the land tenure system of or purchasing land, so to speak, to make it simple. So in other words, Cerro is purchased land, and so therefore no one, no government, no international government, even the ICJ, International Court of Justice, will not be able to take Cerro. If they take the whole of Belize, they can't take Cerro, right? Because it was actually purchased, it was a good title, it is called, very good title, completely different from our other Garifuna people in the Honduras, Guatemala, everywhere else, or any other part of the world for that matter. So Cerro is in fact, long and short, it is very unique. It's probably the only place of its kind on earth, probably the only place on earth like that.
I am learning a lot because I heard about Cerro, but not actually knowing about what the significance of the land was.
That's right. Yeah, very significant. Your people, my people, we grew up on Cerro. We were able to raise your family, your grandparents were able to raise your parents on Cerro. And similarly, here we are right now, we could raise, and you can come to Cerro at any time for that matter. Your entitlement, your rights, and your privileges remain intact in terms of the whole concept of Cerro. You legally, it's protected, because that's the, like I said, the visionaries of Cerro, Jose Mari Nunes, saw that it was going to be important to do this legally. And of course, customarily, they also embedded that in us. So you can speak with anyone about Cerro, and they will tell you, oh yeah, we could go to Cerro anytime.
Irvin talked about how Cerro is a unique place, but it's not only acknowledging your rights to Cerro as a Garifuna person, but there's other responsibilities that comes with these rights when we're talking about the access to land and the privilege of having this access to legally protected land.
You have your rights. But I would like, if I was to say anything to the people who have the rights on Cerro, like yourself, like the next, like the generation after me, you have a right to Cerro. You must handle that right in fairness. So it's a privilege, but you also have, along with accompanying rights, you have responsibilities. All right. So to every right, there's a responsibility. So take those two together, look at it seriously, work on it, and you're gonna continue to be the great nation that you are.
So I also want to talk to you about your connection to, because this in itself is like a form of activism, a form of coming here to a place where people probably heard rumors about, you know, Cerro, you know, doesn't pay taxes and Cerro X, Y, and Z, right? And you wanted to model what that looks like to be here, to live here, right? And I also want to talk to you about other things that you have done, maybe other passions that you have had in Belize, and what are some of those passions?
You know, you're asking me personally, so I have to use the word I. Oh. I generally don't like to use that word. I limit the use of that word I. And I encourage everybody, speak without using I. Let's talk about we and so. But, you know, there's sometimes we've got to do that. So, yes, I've learned about myself that my passion is in justice and fairness for all. I've learned very early that I was not built to tolerate injustice. I again, just looking at myself, what I've learned, and maybe this may help you if you're in that situation, youngster out there. If you're built not to tolerate justice, then don't be ashamed. Pursue it. Try to understand it early, because it will make your life better. So that said, though, that drives what I do. If I'm proud of something that I've had the privilege to do, that I've had the honor, the blessing to do, it would be that there was a program that we run here for 20 years, I think, exact. It was called a study hall program, where many, many people, if you're out there, you probably could relate to this program. And then we were able to take youngsters to really study. Remember, they're youngsters in school system, but we were able to use a part of their time and to help them develop, you know, character, good study habit, excellence in studies, I think, which in that was not available to many, many people if you didn't have the kind of money to pay tutors. But we were able to provide that for 20 years. And it's something that I'm very proud of. It's called the Study Hall Program. Please feel free to research it if you want.
You keep talking about this idea of like justice and recognizing that you are not tolerant of injustice, right? So I want to go back to where this started for you. Was it something that you were taught, or what made you really be passionate about the things that you do today?
I believe we all are born with gifts. So I was born the way I am. So it was from, and I believe it was from before my birth. I believe your passion, you come to earth with your passions, with your gifts. That's what I believe now. And I think that everything that happens is nurtures that, and you bloom to where you are. I'm still not at the point where I can say there's just, you know, I've completed my work. I still got a lot of work to do. But yeah, when did it start for me? The question that you asked, I think it's from birth or before birth. It's been nurtured all along the way. It's been nurtured. It's being nurtured today, even as we speak.
You said something just now that was interesting to me, that your work is still not done. Can you tell me what you meant by that?
And so, yes. So my work is not done, as you say, as you said, tomorrow or this week, we probably have work to do to see if we can help others understand that it is beautiful to be fair. It is lovely. If we're in a family and we're fair with each other, you wash the plates, I do the cooking, you spread the bed, life is going to be beautiful, all right? But if we're unfair, you wash the plate, you do the cooking, you spread the bed, then of course, you know, it cannot be, all right? It cannot be, whichever way it is. You know, unless it is fair and it is just, we will all be able to partake in the decision making. We will all be able to prosper. We'll reach the place where we call social justice. That's what we're heading for, where we're just and fair to each person. But it has to start from basic rules of fairness. So, yes, you still got work to do, as you notice. Huge, huge work to do. If it takes us another 20 years for us to understand that it is so important for us to be fair so that we can bring about a socially just society, then let the work begin. Let the work begin today. Let's work for the next 20 years or 30 years or 40, whatever time it is. But don't be negligent and not do anything and sit on it and continue to live like this, you know.
What kind of advice would you give first gens here in Belize? Even outside of Belize, what would you say to them?
Just go for it. I want to be an encouraging grandparent to my grandchildren and grand generation, I call them. And just do what you got to do. It's the life is lovely out there. It is great. Follow your dreams. Follow your passion. Follow what you were made here, what you came on earth to do. And you will find that, yes, it will be tough many times. But you have been given the tools to succeed. That's a promise that we have. You've been given all the tools to succeed. So don't be afraid. Take fear out of your lives. Fear not even systems or have no fear, as fear is not a spirit that we were made with. Fear is contrary to what we were, what we came to earth for. And yes, if I had to say anything about myself, it would be that I hope that it is said when I'm laid out that I wasn't afraid. Your challenges are all internal, they're generated from you, and you must deal with your challenges. So yes, I've had many challenges. My capabilities of not having the approach in many times to deal with certain situations, or not having the abilities in short to deal with certain situations, those were the biggest challenges that I've encountered. I cannot say that I've had external challenges, because I've never viewed external challenges as a challenge. Yes, to be truthful, there were people who stopped you from doing something, but there are minors. Then they were not very insignificant. Actually, I want to thank them, because they made me a better person, actually. Well, I want to encourage you in what you're doing. Obviously, you're following your dreams, and you're doing something very unconventional. You visited Cerro. Thanks. Welcome to your homeland. Cerro is your homeland. You're on your homeland. And I just want to say, continue your dreams, continue your passion, continue to be good, continue to develop your abilities in what you do. And of course, never hesitate to share what you do with the world. Don't let it be all about money. Of course it was not, because we're not paid for doing this.
Yeah.
But do not ever let it be all about your personal gratification in anything. Let it be for the general good.
I want to say Sademe to Irvin Morgan for being on the show and being delightful and sharing so much wisdom. This is officially the last episode of the things that we carry with us and the things that we redefine this first season. I will launch a trailer of season 2 on July 25th. So please remember to check out that trailer. The second season will be launching in October of 2023. And of course, we want to stay in touch with you. So please follow us on Labyrinth of the First Gen on Instagram, and also check out our website at Labyrinth First Gen. Again, Labyrinth First Gen. And for all the people, the beautiful people that I have the pleasure of interviewing this season, I want to just say thank you for sharing your story with us. And I want to thank you all for also listening. And don't forget to give us that feedback, right? We want to know what was some things that maybe was really impactful for you. What are some things we can improve on? Sademe, thank you again for listening. And as I always say, be in peace, folks. And I'll see you later.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.